Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Fall gardens are joys and work to behold. Yes. Joining us now to talk about a bit of both is Central Ohio's garden sage and regular All Sides guest, Deborah Kanapke. Deborah is a garden designer and consultant, the author or co-author of several gardening books. We were just looking at her book on herb gardening, and she teaches horticulture at Columbus State Community College. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Nice to be back.
You know, we're talking about, this is the time when you actually start harvesting, mm-hmm. you start cooking your food that you've been growing all season. So listeners out there, if you have some good ideas about recipes for the garden harvest, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The last time Deborah was on, we were talking about eggplant.
Eggplant, oh yeah.
And I've had some gorgeous, not in my own garden, but at the farmer's market mm-hmm. this year. Wow, I don't know if it was made. They just seemed more beautiful than ever this year, and I've made some, I do say so myself.
Excellent.
Some very
food.
Good food.
Of course, you're welcome to say that about your own food. To me, that's the way that I like to invite people into my house, my garden, whatever, is to offer food that I've prepared. It is part of it all. And to me, gardening is not only about food for the soul, but food for the stomach.
Right. The good old-fashioned stomach. Bad habit. I've got to like to eat. So give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post it there. Maybe what a good idea is to post a link or something to a recipe if that works for you. And also you can do the same thing on Twitter. You can tweet us at @AnnFisherWOSU. The autumn is a time when you're planting bulbs. I have a couple bulb questions. Mm-hmm. One of them is, we always get the calls from folks to talk about pests like deer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if we could talk about bulbs to plant that are less likely to attract the mm-hmm. pests. Although my problem is, once it comes up,
they eat it
right as the flower blooms. Somebody comes by, I don't know who they are, and they eat it.
It's a combination of animal food gourmets, but one of the best bulbs you can plant is narcissus or the daffodils, and there are, I'm going to use this word, plethora of daffodils out there that are up to 24 inches tall and all the way down to about 4 to 6 inches tall. And everything in between. There are even ones with pink cups, orange cups, yellow, white, you name it. And they bloom, depending on the species or cultivars you put in, they bloom from mid-March all the way into, depending on the season, sometimes end of May, but more like mid-May. The bulbs are poisonous, the flowers are poisonous, the leaves are poisonous. You'll hardly ever see anything eat the daffodils, although they may test them. Because anytime you dig up soil, squirrels and chipmunks seem to know that, and they'll dig down and see what you've hidden for them. So they may do that. Another one are the hyacinths. Those are also poisonous.
The purple
mm-hmm. hyacinths. The little snowdrops are slightly poisonous, but they come up so early that the animals aren't out there yet.
Crocus are not poisonous, are they?
No, they're not. They're one of my favorite bulbs.
Oh, look at the crocus. Oh, the next day it's gone.
Yeah, well, rabbits like crocus, deer like crocus, although it's usually rabbit damage that you're seeing because deer do not like to get close to the ground. There's something with the way their knees work.
Huh.
I'm not sure that's the correct word to say. Knees, elbows, whatever.
Joint.
That's okay. A good word.
And words are my life.
Their joints don't work as well for them to go splat on the ground to get something that's low. So when it's lower down, it's often chipmunk, squirrel, woodchuck. Woodchucks like to eat, although mainly it's squirrels and bunnies. And again, they dig them up to cache them and eat them for later. They're quite tasty to them, I've been told. I don't know how someone knows that. But what I do with crocuses is usually if you can get them through the first year, they're less likely to be eaten, although and if you plant enough of them, they'll eat some, but not all of them. And I put down bird netting over the area that I've just planted. for all my bulbs, and I pin it down with these big staples, earth staples, and these animals do not like to get their paws
stuck in that.
So that's one way to keep them from digging them up. And if you can keep them in the ground over the winter, you have a chance of getting most of them through. This is crocuses.
Right. My guest is Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's garden sage. If you have a question or comment for Deborah, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And we've asked our listeners, if you have an idea about how to use some of the bounty from their garden, give us a call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Beth in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just was doing some stuff yesterday. I had bought a bunch of aesthetically challenged tomatoes, and I was going to make them at the farmer's market. I was going to make them into gazpacho, but I just didn't get around to it, and I was looking at them going, I got to do something with them soon. So having canned once and vowing never to can again, I have there's an alternate flash freezing where you just put them in the water and you let their skins blister, and then you take them out and you put them in cold water, and then you just peel the skins off and put them in the freezer, and they're great for in winter and stews. They add flavor. And then with all the little cherry tomatoes, you don't have to do that. You just pick them and put them in a baggie and stick them in the freezer. And then one more, which is a neighbor told me about, if you have extra sage or extra basil or what have you, also pick that, put it in a baggie, take it out, and then when you're ready to use it, just rub the baggie between your hands and it crumbles, and then you can use it that way.
It just dries out in the baggie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I've never done that with basil. Basil usually turns black when it gets cold, unless it's been processed. So at least in my experience, and maybe
unless
with flash freezing.
Pesto is one way to use it.
Yeah.
Sage is a good one.
Sage works. It's one of my favorite herbs to either dry or put into pesto. Or there's so many things you can do with it. One other thing to do with your tomatoes is tomato sauce. And if you wash them off, you put the whole tomato in except for the core, boil it down, and then use one of those in-pot or stick blenders and blend the skins in with everything. No one will ever know it. You have all the vitamins and minerals still in there, and then you freeze that.
Okay, that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, so many ways to do it.
Thank you.
If you want to give us a call with your idea of what to do with the bounty now that fall is here, I thought I was going to get a lot more tomatoes, and I didn't this year. It looked promising, but...
Well, you know what happened?
What?
Okay. We had all that cool, wet weather, and the tomatoes are sitting there. Okay, I'm waiting.
At the beginning of the season.
At the beginning of the season. So they got a little bit of a slow start.
It was, yes.
And then they got some great rain, and the temperatures are good, and they're blossoming, and then the heat hit. And once it goes over 86 degrees, they stop making flowers.
Okay.
So then you didn't get flowers and you didn't get tomatoes. And then the heat went down. We got some more rain. You got flowers. And now we're into fall.
Yeah.
It's 60 degrees out there right now. And at 60 degrees, the tomatoes will stay green. They won't ripen.
Okay.
So it's time to make pickled green tomatoes.
Yes. Or green tomato relish.
That's right.
Or fried green tomatoes.
Yep.
Yum.
So there's lots of options for the bounty that didn't quite make it to the end.
So they won't ripen now? I mean, could it get warm again next
yes.
week and then it would ripen? Is it worth it, do you think, at this point? I mean, we could still have some really hot weather.
We could. In fact, some of my tomatoes I am taking out. The blight got them, and the Septoria leaf blight, a couple things got them. And so some are already out, and they're in the bad compost pile because you want to take all of that out of your garden. And I'm leaving a few in that have green tomatoes on them, and I'm going to wait and see. And if they don't, then it will be fried green tomatoes or something else.
Back to bulbs.
Okay.
I love talking about tomatoes. I probably have more, but I want to focus on bulbs here for a second. Bulbs, what do we do with summer bulbs? They have to be dug up before fall.
Yes.
So what do you do? Why is that? Why don't they survive like daffodil bulbs? I guess we're talking callas, caladiums, cannas, tuberous mm-hmm. begonias, gladiolas.
There's a bunch of them that are root tender. They go to zone 7 or lower. And the issue is the bulb does not have the mechanism to survive cold weather, freezing temperatures in the soil. We call it like an antifreeze. Plants actually can create a substance that is like an antifreeze, or they flood the cells with a lot of sugars, and so they don't freeze. Pardon me. So that's one reason. That's why they don't go through. But what to do with them? Well, you dig them up, and you want to dig them up after, right before or right after your first light frost. You go through a couple heavy frosts, and you're talking about mush in the ground. You might as well just leave them to turn into compost.
But why after the first light one?
It hardens off, you know, it kills the top, but it doesn't, the ground is still warm, so your bulbs are fine. And that way, when I dig up my cannas, I leave the tops attached, and this is great. Not everyone maybe wants to do this, but I put a bunch of newspaper on the basement floor, and I bring the whole plant in, shake off a lot of the soil, but I don't clean them or anything, because you'll damage the outside of the tuber, and you can invite diseases that will make them, again, into mush over the winter. So I bring them in and let them dry, and then the top, after the top is totally dried, I cut them off close to the tuber in the case, rhizome in the case of the cannas. The rest of them, some of them, the top will just snap off once they're dry. And then I put them in a cool, dry place. My cannas actually go underneath my benches, underneath my succulents, which only get watered once every 1 or 2 weeks in the winter. And then they get a little bit of drip water on them. But you don't want them wet. You don't want them completely dry. You don't want them to freeze, but you want them to be cool. Because if they're warm, they'll start growing again.
Cool and a little humid.
Cool and a touch humid. Not totally dry. So some people have said put them in your refrigerator. I don't think that's a very good idea.
Too cold.
And besides, do you want all your canna rhizomes in your refrigerator?
Who has room in the refrigerator? I don't have stuff to clean out of my refrigerator.
So there are ways to store these harvested bulbs, tubers, and corms. And I often have a lot of them either in the garage close to the wall, the inside wall. You don't want them to freeze. And in some garages, if it's going to freeze, do not put your bulbs there. But in your basement, whatever. I use Excelsior. I've used sphagnum moss. I've used all kinds of materials to be around them to cushion them. And also, that way you can sprinkle a little water with your fingertips periodically just to keep the humidity up. Not humidity, but not let them go totally dry. Hope that helps.
My guest is Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke. We're talking about what to do with the bounty from your garden. We have some emails I want to get to. We have a couple calls.
Okay,
so if you want to call us or email us, the number is 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We do have a tweet from Lady Buckeye 1975. We'll get to that one when we return. That's @AnnFisherWOSU if you want to do that. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Got dinner table discussion, water cooler chat, even pillow talk, but how often are you part of the national conversation? I'm Neil Conan. Raise your voice on everything from the news of the day to the twists and turns of culture and history on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation later today from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And join us for live coverage of President Obama's address before a joint session of Congress. The president will talk about the economy and his jobs creation plan. Join NPR's Michelle Norris for in-depth coverage and analysis. That's an NPR News special Thursday evening at 7 on 89.7 NPR News. 61 degrees with cloudy skies, a chance of rain today and a high of 69. Rain is likely tonight, a low of 60 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking today with Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage. Kind of the focus of the show is what to do with what you have growing in your garden, what's coming out of it. So if you have an idea, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us, as did Sarah. She writes, my sister accidentally grew some really, really long zucchini, and she has been making zucchini lasagna. She used thinly sliced new zucchini instead of lasagna noodles, cheese sauce, etc. It was delicious. Boy, that does sound great.
Oh, my God. I want that recipe.
Yes. I guess you just use it instead of the noodles.
I know. What a great idea.
Yeah, it is a great idea. Yummy. You know what? I was thinking, well, that would be just like eggplant parmesan, but yeah. Eggplant would be another example of something that
I've
would
actually
work
done
well
that.
With it. Yeah.
With layered eggplants and portobello mushrooms.
Oh, yummy.
Yeah, with white
Too
beans.
Too bad we can't grow portobello mushrooms in our gardens.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, a tweet from Lady Buckeye 1975. She says, I had way too many cucumbers a few weeks ago, and I made 60 jars of pickles. Well,
it sounds like
you had just enough for 60 jars of pickles. Wow. There's a brave person.
And I love pickles. That's something I can eat every day.
Yeah, I do too. I love pickles. Karen in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Karen.
Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. There was a buzzing. I didn't hear that.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you. I use your book, Deborah, as my garden Bible. I take it to the nursery with me.
Which book is that?
The one on perennials for Ohio.
Well, thank you. I hope it's well worn.
It is.
Good.
It is. Well, I have a question about the use of used coffee grounds in the garden and or the compost pile, and I can't find anywhere how much to use or when to start or when to stop using it. So,
are you just putting them into your compost pile?
Yeah, I haven't done it as yet, but I didn't want to overuse it.
You won't. Go ahead. Put as many coffee grounds, tea leaves, whatever you want in your compost pile. It's great.
Okay.
It breaks down. There is a little bit of acidifying action, but actually, you know, it all works out. It's not a problem. If you're putting it directly into the garden, as some people do, around their plants that want more acid, make sure you stay about 2 to 3 inches away from the crown or branches or trunk of a tree.
Okay.
I put my tea leaves directly into the garden around my azaleas. And, you know, my husband and I drink a lot of tea. A lot. And so there are tea grounds everywhere, and that's for my special plants. But both tea and coffee grounds are very safe in the garden, plus the filters, especially if you have the unbleached ones. Put those in the compost pile, too. Don't throw them away.
Okay.
They compost down.
All right. May I ask another question, or is it?
It's up to Ann.
Sure, you can ask another question, Karen, but don't let it get to be a habit.
I have a clematis that isn't blooming, and I think it's in the wrong position. Do they transfer, and if so, when to do that?
They can transfer. You have to take a lot of soil, and sometimes they will just die on you anyways. You know, and you say clematis, I say clematis. You know, it's like potato, potato.
I say clematis.
Yeah, and that too, you know, it's okay. I have had not so good luck transplanting my clematis in my yard. And I'm not exactly sure why, other than their roots are very thin, fibrous, and they're easy to break. So I think that might be a problem. But you know what? If it's not in the right place and it's not blooming, what are you losing by transferring it?
Exactly.
And then just buy another one if it doesn't work.
Right,
and keep me in business.
Let me ask you. Karen, thanks for that call. I'm glad you brought
clematis.
Thank you, Karen.
I finally found a place for my clematis. I've moved it around many times. And
yours has survived.
And I've accidentally busted it off a couple times. And it always comes back to a certain degree. And this year was the best ever. I think I found some sort of place. But after the first blooming, in which we had 6 or 7 fabulous, these beautiful creamy pink blooms. That's it. It just, everything, you know, they stayed for a while. They looked pretty. Then they fell off. And then the vine browned up, and now it started up again, and it's been going up just the last couple weeks. going crazy. Did the sun change positions? Is it getting more sun? Why does that happen?
There are several reasons why that could have happened. Did it turn brown when the rain stopped and the heat hit?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think
they're very, very susceptible to change in temperature.
And it wouldn't matter if I gave it a lot of water or
anything?
It
might have. Okay. That might have helped. There's also verticillium wilt. But since it's coming back right now, I think that's not the problem. But that also happened to mine this year. And now they're coming back with the cool weather.
And I think I even have a blossom. Again,
I believe
so.
It. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's good. I just wondered. I don't want to move it again. Liz in Newark, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Liz.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hello. Okay. Having an echo?
Liz,
yeah,
are you?
Yeah, sorry. I'm here.
Okay.
I had a really bad problem this year with tomato blight.
Mm-hmm.
And it affected my pepper plants and everything.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if there's something that I can do right now or early next year to take care of the problem.
First of all, clean up all debris and do not put that in a compost pile that you are planning on using. If you don't have a compost pile, then you can put it in the yard waste, and then it either goes to a landfill or somewhere where hopefully it's composted above 160 degrees, because that will kill the pathogens. Do not plant your peppers, tomatoes, or anything that's in that family, the Solanaceae family or tomato, potato family, in that same spot for about 5 years.
Okay.
The pathogen needs to go down to a dull roar in the soil, and it's there now. So you need to rotate your tomatoes, peppers out of there. So what I want you to think about now is where you're going to put them and get that bed prepared for them by putting in some good compost, hot chicken manure, if you can get a hold of it, that'll kill things in there. That's what I'm doing.
Deborah's personal favorite.
Yes, it is. It really messes things up in the soil there for a while. It puts a lot of good stuff in there and kills pathogens. Get the bed started where it's going to be for next spring, but don't put them in the same place.
Well, I have two raised beds, and I made a mistake that I put them in the same spot as last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know I learned my lesson there. And I have in my other bed, I usually did green beans, I did carrots. And I know it affects potatoes, but are carrots okay?
Carrots are fine. They're a different family. There are several books that tell you which plants are in which family and which go together. In fact, I have one with me. The Moosewood Restaurant Kitchen Garden is kind of a fun little guide to get out of the library and see if it would work in your library. But it talks about companion planting, which herbs to put with which vegetables, and which vegetables grow best with each other, and which are susceptible to the same types of diseases. So that will help you determine where you can put things. But switch your beds this year. Or next year.
So is there anything that I can overplant onto it right now that'll help?
There are some cover crops. You can go to your favorite garden center and get either what we call an annual rye or alfalfa, whatever, and it'll grow up enough and turn into green manure, and then you fold that into the soil when it dies back in the winter or in the spring.
And is that good to do in both, or is that mainly just the one in the problem box where the blight was?
I would do it in both. It puts good plant stuff back in.
An annual rye or alfalfa?
Alfalfa, and there are other things too. There's a clover. You don't necessarily want these to bloom, by the way. You want it to grow up, and then you put it back into
just
the soil.
Like a crew cut grow up.
Yeah, crew cut,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well,
right,
good luck
Liz,
with that.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bob in Dublin, you're on the air with Deborah Kanapke. Welcome to the show.
Hi, did you say Bob?
I did.
Okay, great. I have a question about summer squash and the squash vine borer and mm-hmm. cucumbers and the cucumber beetle. And I'm curious if there is some way we can protect. We have a community garden, and almost every year with those two crops get devastated by those two pests. And if we were to use row covers at the right time in the insect's growing cycle, would that do it? Or what else can we do to get decent crops off of those two crops?
Well, you one of your answers you did say, row covers. That will help. You have to know You have to get into the life cycle of the cucumber beetle and the squash borer to know when they're flying. And one of the best ways to know when they are flying is to get on to next spring onto the Beagle, the BYGL Backyard Garden and Landscape Report that is put out by the Cooperative Extension. They talk about growing degree days, which is how much heat and moisture, mostly heat, that certain diseases, pathogens, insects are going to hatch or show up. And it will tell you when the squash beetle is out, I'm sorry, the cucumber beetle is out there and the squash borer is out there. Cover your crops.
Okay.
And when you've had egg hatch for those two organisms. The other thing, too, is you can plant your summer squash and your cucumbers later in the season.
Okay.
And that's another strategy that you can use. As to how much later, it depends on the season, but instead of putting them in right when you put your tomatoes in, trying to beat the frost early in May, you put them in end of May, beginning of June.
Yeah. I noticed that this year when we planted bush beans really late in early to mid-August, and we just have this phenomenal crop of beans, whereas mm-hmm. last year we planted pole beans and the insects got them.
Right.
So that's an interesting approach. Okay.
It's knowing your enemy.
And what's the name of that report from the Extension Service?
It is online, and it comes out once a week on Thursday. It's the Beagle, the BYGL, the Backyard Garden and Landscape Report. And I know that the link is on the Facebook page or will be put on again.
We'll link it on our website, and we'll also put it on the Facebook page.
But it's,
okay, great.
Yeah, BYGL.OSU.edu, I believe, but it'll be there.
Okay. Yeah,
BYGL. Okay.
Yeah, and our website is WOSU.org/allsides. So
okay.
If you can get there, we'll have it for you today.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye bye. You can give us a call, as did Bob, 614-292-8513. Email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can tweet us at Ann Fisher, WOSU, or go to the Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and post your question or comment for Deborah Kanapke there. I have plenty of questions, so no hard feelings if you don't, but I have a garden I have to worry about myself. Well, you always talk a lot about improving soil and how mm-hmm. to improve your soil. And this is the best time of year.
It's the best.
So tell us, give us a...
Oh, gosh. There's so many different things you can do.
I know the chicken thing.
The
manure
chicken thing,
is really,
talk
really,
about that.
You know,
the cover crops.
Cover crops.
I will put down...
Yeah, what's a cover crop? I hadn't really thought about
it. It's a way to put... It's what's called a green manure. So if you've ever heard of the term green manures, that's what is it. It's cover crop. And you grow it this time of year, September, October.
Farmers do it with their fields, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an old, old technique to put nitrogen back into the soil, but also the roots break up the soil. So in the winter, it allows infiltration, again, of air and water. And it's a good thing to do. I've done it in a couple of my gardens, but sometimes I have fall crops in my gardens, and my lettuces and my kale, and so I don't get a cover crop into those areas because I have food growing there. And then I put a row cover on and try to get it into December. So when I move my vegetables around, though, I can put them into different areas. You can put leaf mold down now, but I tend to do that more in the spring. Although if I have any extra, I'll put it down.
Now, is leaf mold just...
Leaf compost.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And when you rake up your leaves, instead of putting them in those brown bags and sending them off to landfill or somewhere else to be composted, put them in your gardens. Now, you don't want your leaves in your favorite garden to be 4 feet in depth. But having about 6 to 8 inches is okay.
Even if it's covering up stuff?
It can cover up stuff. And then in the winter, you can go out, and if you know you have some crowns of things, you can kind of just move the leaves around. They're packing down, and so this will lift them up a little bit. But I have a couple areas where I do not take the leaves out of them, and the soil is wonderful. So... Now, those are my more, a little bit more wild area in the back of the yard. You've seen it back against mm-hmm. the fence.
Or
my natural area,
right.
quote unquote. and then the gardens that are in front of that, the leaves stay there. So you need to think about how you can return the energy into the soil that's been taken out by the plants during the season. And there are a lot of ways to do it.
Should there be anything, any kind of treatments for soil? If you want to acidify your soil more, is this the time to do it, to get it ready? If you want, may think you're going to be planting some azaleas there later or whatever it is that...
You can put in things like cottonseed meal and alfalfa meal. Both of those are acidifying, and they take a long time, and they're very slow because it's a low, very low concentration. But what it does is it keeps the soil more stable, and then when you need that kick is when you use your aluminum sulfate or whatever. If you're doing that, organic gardeners usually do not use aluminum sulfate, but it is something that is used to give a kick to those azaleas in our clay, higher pH soil.
Now, and when you talk about using the leaves, a lot of people are going to use them now. You said it's better in the spring, but...
Oh, the leaf compost?
The leaf compost. You just shred it up, or you just take the lawnmower through it, or you don't even have to do that?
I shred it up. Now, the leaf compost that you get, say, from Ohio Mulch or Chris Brothers or your favorite garden center, that's already gone through a composting process, and it's going to break down really fast. Leaves that aren't composted are going to break down slower. So it's better if you do mulch them with your mower or put them through something to break them up. In some areas that are more wild, you can leave the whole leaf there, but some leaves will cause more problems, like oak leaves, which compost more slowly than, say, your maple leaves or your honey locusts, which are tiny and disappear almost immediately.
So. My guest is Deborah Kanapke. She's author and Ohio's Garden Sage. If you have questions or comments about your fall garden and how to prepare it for the spring, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon with a discussion of Top Secret America, Intelligence After 9/11. That begins at noon on Fresh Air. And you can join WOSU for a Chefs in the City Ohio beer tasting in the outdoor beer garden at the historic Granville Inn on September 14th. Local food hors d'oeuvres by Chef Chad Lavely will be paired with a selection of beers from some of Ohio's best breweries. Brewmaster Matthew Barbie from Lancaster's Rock Mill Brewery will co-host this exclusive event. Tickets are on sale now for $45 each. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to reserve your tickets. And look for information about the Granville Inn's lodging specials.
Support for 89.7 comes from Cooper & Elliott, a law firm dedicated to protecting the vulnerable, preserving the rights of citizens, and creating safer communities through the civil justice system. Online at CooperElliott.com.
61 degrees under cloudy skies, warming up to only a high of 69 today. Showers are likely tonight and a low of 60 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about our fall gardens. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we're interested to hear what you're using your bounty for, how the sort of things you're making with it. Call us, put it on email, put it on Facebook, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, whatever floats your boat. We've been talking about soil degradation and how to boost it in the fall. And you said you forgot to...
I wanted to mention two things. If you have weeds and they're not in bloom, don't take the weeds to your compost pile. They're not in bloom and they're not in seed. Leave them in the garden. At this time of year, they're going to compost down right away. And especially with dandelion leaves, which are sending up their new leaves now, and you dig down and get it out, leave it on top of the soil. It returns phosphorus and potassium back to the soil. Garlic mustard is now coming up with its rosette stage. Now is the time to take it out, break the root off the top, leave it in the garden. It returns all kinds of great stuff to the soil. So I'm doing that now in my garden.
Looks very excited about it.
Because it's like, I just saved myself a trip to the compost pile.
The good thing about Deborah is just simple pleasures, Deborah.
Well, that's what life's all about.
It really is.
Especially this time of year with all the, as you say, the bounty coming in. I just love, I put all this pesto into the freezer and it's like, oh, I can't wait to use it this winter when I'm dying for some summer.
Right. And pesto's the best. Rick in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann, and thanks for having such a great show every day.
Thank
Wonderful.
You.
I have my little tiny little plot has four organic tomato plants. Two of them are cherry tomatoes, and two of them are beefsteak size. And they've just been so great this year. They've just been robust, and right now I've got on the two organic cherry tomato plants, I've got about 500 or 600 tomatoes on there.
I believe it.
And they're just amazing. And they're just come, we were away for a week and they've just come out. So there's just so much there. Is there anything that I should be doing while the plants are still producing fruit?
No.
At this time?
No, just harvest as they come ripe. And then if you hear there's going to be a frost, take all those green tomatoes off and make pickled cherry tomatoes, which are so good. And they're
okay.
So cute. But there's really nothing to be done now. You really don't want to be fertilizing at this point. It's the end of the season. Just enjoy what's coming up.
It's been great. Last year we had the tomato worm attack.
Mm-hmm.
This year we've been so lucky. We've had no pests at all. We've been using garlic spray and egg yolks or eggs. Rotten eggs on the ground to keep the little chipmunks a little bit at bay there. So
you mentioned garlic spray. Deborah, could you just plant garlic plants around tomatoes? Is that one of those companion? I mean, what is it about garlic?
A lot of animals do not like garlic.
Oh, just they don't like it. Okay.
They don't like it. But the garlic spray, you're putting it right on the leaves, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, and so that's even more off-putting. Garlic will sometimes keep animals away, but not always.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just sidestep the garlic and go eat your plant.
Okay. Rick, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
It's always great. Thank you very much, Anna.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, too, there.
Thank
Deborah.
You.
Deborah Kanapke. She's the Ohio's Garden Sage. She's with us now to answer all your gardening questions for the fall garden, 614-292-8513. And Dan in North Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a brand new garden plot that I tilled real well in midsummer and planted buckwheat, which is in full flower now. I'll turn that under in late September, and then I'm going to heavily manure it with horse manure. And,
yes.
and then I'll plant winter rye for my cover crop. I wonder if that real hot manure there, do I need to let that mellow for a few weeks before I plant my rye, or will it be okay to get it in there pretty quick afterwards?
You can't put, do not put your seeds right into the hot manure. They won't germinate. They'll burn up.
Well, it will be very well tilled first. I'm not going to leave it on the surface.
Okay. Well, I still would wait a week.
Okay. A week.
Or
okay.
two.
Or just get a few rains on it.
Yeah, because when it's hot, I mean, there's a lot of nitrogen going there, and those little seeds are going to say, I am not germinating, and whew, it's hot in here. So, but it sounds like a great, you expressed the cover crop idea perfectly. You're really setting up that garden for success next spring.
Okay. So I normally, in my other gardens, I get my rye in, usually not even before November 1st. So if I get this tilled up in early October, I can just put them in the ground then, like I usually do in early November.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yep, okay. It should work.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Dan's talking to Deborah Kanapke, the only person I know who can anthropomorphize a seed.
Well, so. I know. I mean, but think about it. You know, these little tiny seeds, they have no defenses.
Too.
You know?
But they can talk.
They can talk.
If you have a question or comment for Deborah Kanapke, give us a call. And Jane in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm calling about powdery mildew on peonies.
Mm-hmm. We had it this year.
What
do you do about it? Well, when you clean up your plant in the fall, take all of those leaves and take them away from the area of your plant. Don't let them sit there. That will keep some of the powdery mildew inoculum from getting at your leaves next year. And if you don't have a bad compost pile, find a neighbor who does, or start one. Yeah, I have a good compost pile, which is down to nothing now. I've been putting compost. Speaking of compost, I've been putting it around some of my plants for the fall. But my bad compost pile is where my peony leaves will be going this year, because every single one of them had the powdery mildew. It's not worth spraying it. It's not worth your money. It's something that happens every year, and it doesn't decrease the vigor of the plant. But you do need to clean up the area.
Does it only affect the leaves?
It only affects the leaves unless it comes really early, and it can affect the buds. You can have some issues with the flowers, but usually we don't. Usually the powdery mildew hits in the middle of the summer after the peonies are done blooming.
Okay.
All right, Jane.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Marjorie in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a question about sweet corn and raccoons. I had beautiful sweet corn this year, and then I had to go out of town for a week, and then it was just utter devastation, and I lost the whole crop. Is there any, like, natural way I can prevent that, like with, like, the Three Sisters type of garden, or do I have to do, like, a fence?
A fence, and depending on where you are, let's see, it says Columbus. Well, in Columbus, you can't discharge a firearm, so we better forget that one. But but you need to exclude the raccoons. We lost sweet corn to raccoons in the past too, and now we have it fenced in. But you know, sweet corn takes up so much room.
Yeah.
You know, the farmers, they can afford to lose some to the raccoons because they put so much in.
Right.
But we don't have that luxury, so it's either excluding with a fence, or having a big dog in the yard constantly, or having an electrified fence that doesn't have to be as tall. You just have to remember that it's electrified so that when you're going in, you don't get shocked.
Sure.
Yeah. So, well, good luck with that, because it's terrible to come home to all of your corn down on the ground. And
yes.
No ears.
Very sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's right. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Marjorie. We have an email from Keith in Westerville. He writes, I planted a fig tree a few years ago, but every winter, everything above ground dies. Then sometime in June, it will put out new shoots and will grow to around 6 feet in height by September. Is there anything I can do to get it through the winter? It's too big to bring inside.
Oh, yeah. There are a couple things. The Italians have an amazing method where they dig the root ball halfway up and lay the plant over, cover it with leaves and then burlap, and then write it in the spring after danger of frost has passed. I have personally never done that, but I have seen it done, and then you get figs. The other thing you can do is put leaves all around the lower part as high as you can, and then wrap that with burlap so it's still standing up. You may lose some of your shoots, but you'll still have a head start in the spring, and hopefully you'll get some fruit. But and if we have a winter like last year, which was a zone 7 winter, you might, with that second way will work, because they are hardy to zone 7. Mine were knocked back too hard, otherwise I would have had fruit this year. But I'm going to do the burlap thing this year with a big pile of leaves over them and burlap over that.
Okay, Keith, now let us know next spring
how it did.
Yeah, let us know how it did.
Yeah, whether you laid it down or put stuff around it.
Mm-hmm.
And then tell me if you're eating fresh figs in the mid to late summer.
It didn't work, don't call. We planted a new cherry tree this year because our other one died even after I'd been bragging about it. It was old, and I think a windstorm took it down. Mm-hmm. But anyways, put the new one in. We put it in the middle of the yard where there's lots of sun, and it lost a bunch of leaves. Didn't lose all of its leaves, and we were watering it, but we did do it this summer. We didn't do it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know that fall is the best time to plant a tree. It didn't drop all of its leaves. It kept maybe about a fourth of them. Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to be tough on myself. I was in denial for a while, saying, well, it's only half, but really I think it's about a fourth that's left. But there are little buds that have popped up on the branches mm-hmm. where the leaves were. So what's the prognosis? I mean, what are the chances this tree's going to make it?
Well, it's pushing out new leaves to make...
For next year.
If it has buds, I mean, that's good.
Yeah.
That means that it's living. And you'll know more in the spring when it comes back. But again, it was that heat, that high heat that hit, even if you were watering. That happened at one of my clients' houses. So the heat is a problem. Even though you're watering, you just have to make sure it's even watering. And good luck in the spring.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure you wanted to hear that.
No.
You wanted a hard and fast answer.
No. I want a cherry pie is what I want. Yeah. We have an email from Paul. He says, I had a nasty problem with squirrels biting into ripening tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you, Paul. I tried using liquid fence, pepper spray, soapy water. Nothing worked. Someone told me the squirrels did that to get water. So I put out a pan of water with a gallon or so of water near the plants. Whether it was the water or something else, they stopped eating the fruit. What's your theory on this? Was it the water or something else? It does seem like something just kind of sticks its, mm-hmm. you know,
and
takes a bite, and that's it. And then they mm-hmm. whip it. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. They just picked a beautiful tomato that,
and ruined half of it.
It will never go into a salad. Now.
And who's going to eat a tomato that has squirrel spit on it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, you know.
You're hoping it's squirrel.
There's a principle, yeah.
That sounds like a good idea to me. I've never really thought about it. We've had squirrels in our, we call it exclosure, and they have taken bites. We've also, I believe, chipmunks have been in there and doing similar things. The water idea is great, and I'm going to investigate it when I get home because I've not heard that one, but it sounds good. It sounds reasonable.
They're thirsty.
They are. And you know what? When we had the heat, a lot of the reservoirs dried up.
Right.
And they had all this water before, and then they didn't. So, and that probably, it always happens when it's hot.
LaVon in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I had this question about my oak tree. Every year for the last couple of years, it looked like somebody shot the leaves with a shotgun, and then the margin of the leaves turned brown. What have I got?
You have a disease.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember which one it is. Oh, they just talked about all kinds of things happening to oak leaves on the Beagle. Last week, I think it was last week's Beagle, where they talked about oak leaf problems. There are different fungi, and there are insects that will also make holes in the leaves. And I know my friend Jim Boggs is probably rolling, saying, come on, Deb, you know what it is. Come up with the name. But
maybe refer to Beagle again.
Refer to the Beagle. And there isn't much you can do about it. You're not going to do a wholesale spray for your oak tree.
Too big a tree.
Yeah, it's too big. And, each year the pathogens are different, ferociousness, if you will, depending on our weather. So I don't think it will kill your tree unless you see it really covering the tree and it's losing all of its leaves too early. Right now, most of the resources are going down or are down at the roots, and the trees are getting ready to go dormant. So
Sure. It's
not like it's causing any problems, big problems with the food supply at this point.
Good.
So,
thank you very much.
You're
Appreciate
welcome.
It. Okay.
Thank you, LaVon.
Another thing
once again, BYGL.
.osu.edu.
.osu.edu. We'll have that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. We'll post that there and maybe try to get it onto Facebook as well.
It's a phenomenal resource. Mm-hmm. Comes out each week and tells you what's happening in different places in Ohio. Don't worry about the Latin names. They also use common names for the plants and diseases. And it's a great resource.
It's time to divide perennials. Is fall better than spring, or where do you fall in on that?
Here's what I tell my students. If it blooms in the spring, you divide it early spring or early fall. If it blooms in the fall, you divide it in early to mid-spring. If it blooms in the summer, you choose spring or fall. There are certain ones that really like to be divided right after they bloom, and that's daylilies, irises, and there's one other, hostas.
So if daylilies just went through their last little bloom. Set, it's
now.
Okay? Now's
mm-hmm.
the time.
Do it.
Okay, and hostas?
Hostas?
Are probably okay right now.
They're okay to divide, although it's getting a little late for hostas. It's
except
for
some of them have just bloomed.
That's
that one.
True.
That one that does the white mm-hmm. flowers, it's so pretty.
Yeah, you can divide that now. Okay. Best time for hostas, after they bloom.
All right.
Or early spring.
Okay.
Early to mid.
We're waiting on a call to come through, and it's Justin, and we're going to get to that call, and then we're going to be winding down.
Okay.
So, Justin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
We planted a tulip and a lilac tree the beginning of the summer, I believe it was.
Okay.
And they don't seem to be growing all that much. Is it possible that the first year they don't grow that much, and then the second year they take off? Or
they're putting their resources into root development so they can go over the winter. And you'll see more growth, especially with the tulip tree, in the next couple of years. They really will take off. A lilac may be a little bit slower, but once it's established, it will turn into its beautiful shrub. So, okay. Yeah, and this year it was tough in the summer. Hopefully you kept them well watered during our very quick heat, or very hot heat spell.
Thanks, Justin, for that call, and thanks to everybody for their calls. There's plenty of things to plant this fall.
Mm-hmm.
Lettuces. There's still time to do a lettuce.
Sure,
a batch
put
of lettuce.
In. You never know when our frost is going to hit. Hope springs eternal. I throw the seeds out and wait and see what happens.
And we talked about dividing perennials, and we talked about improving your soil, and we could go on and on and on. Yeah. But trenching. Oh, I want to talk about trenching.
Oh, and lawn. Now is the time if you're renewing your lawn, putting grass seed down. April 15th to September 15th is the perfect
August
window.
15th or
August,
April.
August.
Okay,
gotcha. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
That's okay.
August 15th to September 15th.
Okay. Well, Deborah Kanapke, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate
thank you.
It.
Nice being here.
Deborah Kanapke, she's Ohio's garden sage. She's a garden designer and consultant, the author or co-author of several gardening books, and she teaches horticulture at Columbus State Community College. So thanks to Deborah. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. Thank you.